Welcome to New Human Living Radio Show, bringing you powerful interviews to awaken the power in you. Learn more at newhumanliving.com. And now your host, Les Jensen.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm so glad you chose to join us. I think we're in for a delightful topic tonight. Tonight the topic is archetypes and our Akashic records. This topic has been a very curious thing for me in the past week or so. My last blog touched on this topic, and I got some very interesting responses. I think I've kind of struck a nerve to put these two ideas together. And I think we're going to have a really fun conversation tonight as we noodle or contemplate this idea of archetypes and our Akashic records. You know, it's a curious thing because one of the favorite things I like about being the host of this radio show is human consciousness in and of itself. We on this show, we're not afraid to look in every crevice and nook and cranny of our human potential to really flesh out perhaps the hidden, perhaps the unknown, perhaps the technique, if you will, of how we handle our human consciousness, how we handle this human experience that we all are. It's when I go to write a blog or contribute to my book or compose a radio show, I like to look at things from a purely energetic point of view, and I think that's really given me some insights about the nature of this thing called human consciousness, because what we're really talking about here is human consciousness as an experience, human consciousness as a history, so to speak, both forward history and history towards our past with the Akash, and then our human consciousness itself. And so how do we tie all this together? How do we put the pieces of the puzzle together to bring ourselves new potentials, new possibilities, new ideas, new techniques, so you can live the life that you love? So in my career, I spent more than 30 years in broadcast television. We have transmitter sites, television transmitter sites. And I tell you what, when I first started working in television, they were mysteries to me. As a kid right out of school, I didn't ever attend college with any significance. And I didn't even finish vocational school. My last complete formal education was only high school. And I ended up on these transmitter sites, and I'm standing in front of a big piece of equipment, and there's all this electricity going into it. The power meter's spinning around like a flipping top. Electricity's coming in. We're generating a signal. We're amplifying that signal a lot, and we're broadcasting it out through the ether, if you will, so millions of TV sets can receive that signal with an agreed-upon template and then decode the information in that signal, and voila, there you have it. On your TV at home is a pristine, high-definition television picture with sound. So what does that have to do with the archetypes and the Akash? I think there's a lot of analogies. As we delve into this, it'll become more and more evident. So what is it that I'm doing when I'm broadcasting a signal? Well, I tell you what, when you make a high power signal, and it would be common to have a million watts of power coming out of this antenna. Well, a million watts of power, I mean, your microwave is 1,000 watts, and a million watts is like 1,000 microwaves ovens, and it'll easily melt metal. It'll easily do a lot of damage. But if you do it right, if you honor the nature of that power, it will go out the door gracefully, and it will arrive at the home gracefully, and the information will get conveyed. So purity is a very big deal when it comes to broadcasting. We measure our signal's purity down to the slightest detail. We pay a lot of attention to purity. And then there's also spectrum, the spectrum of frequency or frequencies that we use to generate the signal. Now, there's a lot of people talking about frequency and energy in the law of attraction, and that's very cool. It's wonderful. But power is how much energy? I mean, you can think of a butterfly fart that might not even blow out a match, and then you can think of a hurricane or a tsunami that'll wipe out a city or a village. How much energy is important? Because we can talk on the surface level about archetypes, and we can talk at the surface level of the Akash, but what about this human being, and what's the nature of the human being? Our consciousness, our persona, and how does all this tie together? So let's jump into this. Let's start with archetypes. Looking at the description of archetypes, a common one is a template, the idea of an archetype being a template, and often seen as an ideal template. The archetype of the ideal warrior, the archetype of the ideal Congress, the ideal template, if you will, of what we're talking about. But I want to bring it into the human experience and think of the idea of personas, if you will, the archetype of a warrior, the archetype of a healer, the archetype of a king or a queen or a ruler, if you will, the archetype of a magician or an alchemist. When we talk about an archetype, we can look at it as an attribute or trait of a human being. He is a warrior. She is a warrior. They have a strong, profound portrayal of the warrior archetype. So I think sometimes where we get tripped up is this idea of right and wrong, because sometimes when we want to embody a new archetype, our idea of the archetype itself can be where we get ourselves tripped up. It should be pretty cut and paste. What's a good warrior and what's not, and what's not a good warrior? That's a whole conversation in and of itself. Is a good warrior one that can go in and conquer and slaughter the enemy, or is a good warrior one that can prevent the battle in the first place? And the reason I touch on this is because you have desires. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but chances are pretty good you have desires of what you want in your life. And maybe you're experiencing them and maybe you're not. But I want to really quickly share a story about me as a chief engineer at a TV station. I'm the leader of the engineering department. And when you think of an engineer, engineers have to be right. They have to be accurate. I just talked about purity. When you're given a license to broadcast, you're given very, very specific frequencies, and you're held to tight tolerances to make sure that the purity and the integrity of your signal is right. It's correct. So when you think of an engineer, you say, well, an engineer's right. An engineer knows. An engineer is smart or wise about how to generate this signal. And the story I want to share quite a while ago, as a chief engineer, I'm noodling the nature of consciousness, and I'm sitting here looking at karma. And karma, it's a very curious thing, karma as a posturing with the nature of nature, karma as a standing wave, if you will, of energy. When my consciousness observes something happening and I put judgment on it, when I put even preference on it, I say, well, that part is bad and this part is good. This is desirable and that's undesirable. And that sounds pretty sterile. That's pretty clean. That's innocent. There's nothing to be had there. Move along, move along. Oh, wait a minute. Time out. Wait. So when I posture with what is this environment around me, if the posturing in and of itself is creating a karmic propensity, then the attribute of me as an engineer always being correct or always being right has to have a karmic consequence. By seeing myself, and I'm the chief engineer, and if we were to be spot inspected, they'd come in, they'd walk right up to me and say, okay, show me your papers, prove to me that your signal has integrity, show me that you are correct, show me that you are right. I mean, the station's license was in my hands, and the way I protected that license was being, quote, correct, unquote. And so, well, that's cut and dry. Be right all the time. And rubbed me just, something was off about that. So as the chief engineer, I thought, there has to be power in being wrong. I can't posture with right and wrong and not have a karmic consequence. And that just seems off because that's my job function. So I decided to test it, and it wasn't an easy decision. I decided to openly be wrong, to make it okay to be wrong. And in the first engineering meeting, I'm standing up there and going, well, okay, we need to get this HD signal through the microwave up to the transmitter, and the way I've been talking about encoding the audio is not going to work. What I first came up with was wrong. Everything we're pursuing related to the audio is wrong. I made a mistake. And I tell you, you could hear a pin drop. What? Did you say that right? And I just kept going with the conversation, and the next meeting, there was another opportunity for me to say, well, what I was doing was wrong. I made a mistake. And after a while, all the engineers that were working for me came up with this, pretty much the same sentence that said, well, if he's wrong and it's okay, then it must be okay for me to be wrong. My whole department perhaps was having this thought. Well, if it's okay for Les to be wrong, then it must be okay for me to be wrong. And I was kind of nervous. I kind of felt like I might have let the cat out of the bag, and it might be a real difficult thing to get the cat back in the bag. But I plunged forward with that, and a very, very curious thing happened. Typically, what would happen when I would ask for ideas was the mavericks of the group, the engineers that love to do whole projects by themselves. They didn't work together so well as a team, but they had their own ideas, and if you give them a job, they'd figure out how to do it, and they would chime in. So I would ask a question, you know, how are we gonna do this aspect? And these few engineers would always have ideas, and the other engineers were silent. They rarely contributed to the conversation. Well, time progresses, and wait, now it's okay to be wrong. A curious thing happened, a very curious thing happened, and it was a very powerful aspect. When I made it okay to be wrong, after a while, these engineers that were quiet started contributing. And at first they were really shy about it. They're like, well, I don't know if this will work or not, but couldn't we, you know, bring it up on a subcarrier of the of the microwave and integrate it through the encoder on the hill? Hey, yeah, you know, that's got some good possibilities. Let's take a look at that. And to fast forward through the scenario, everybody felt more connected to their job. Everybody felt engaged in the problems facing the engineering department. And to make this story short, things like the engineers would show up in the morning and go, you know, I was thinking about this problem last night at home. And I'm like, what? You were thinking about problems that we're trying to solve in engineering while you're at home at night? And they were excited. Their morale went up. Their contribution to the department went up. The whole vibe of the department went up several octaves. Everybody enjoyed their job more. We had more input to solving problems. People were happier. They were satisfied with their job. And that was all based on polarity, having this idea of right and wrong. So when we talk about archetypes, say there's an archetype you desire. Well, I want to be wealthy. I want to be happy. I want to be in love. I want to be enlightened. I want to be whatever. And the reason I brought up that story is the very thing that might be stopping you from being able to embody that archetype is your idea or your portrayal of what that archetype is. Like a successful entrepreneur is not going to be afraid of risks. It's inherent in bringing something new about. But if your vision of an archetype is when an entrepreneur drives fancy cars and is in the social scene, and there's no comprehension of the idea of risk and risk management or lack of management, not to posture with risk, that can be the very thing that's stopping you from embodying it. So when we talk about archetypes, we want to look at it with soft eyes. In other words, we don't want to get a real sharp pencil out and draw a really straight line saying it's this and it's that. And the beauty of it is when you look at it energetically, just like transmitting energy through the air, and especially the spectrum and purity of energy, if I look at archetypes within my persona, whether I'm embodying them or not, I can look at these spectrums of energy. On one side a sinner and on the other side a saint. You can think of a pendulum swing. Another example is, let's take the idea of powerful. The archetype of being powerful. I want to be a powerful warrior of truth and justice for the human culture. Boy, that's powerful. And I'm serious, that's a powerful idea to empower your sense of self, to empower your sense of dominion and permission, if you will, to be a human consciousness in this collective. That's very powerful, and I'm sincere about it. But let's look at power. How can we get messed up with power? So I like the idea of a pendulum when we talk about spectrums. Pendulums can be at rest in the middle. They're neither left or right. And then we can have the idea of the pendulum swinging, perhaps all the way up to the right and back to center, and then continuing on all the way up to the left. So let's look at the archetype of power. So pick a side, doesn't matter. Sinner and saint are two sides of the same coin. Hot and cold are two sides of temperature. Fast and slow are two sides of velocity. Here and there are two sides of location. Which side is which really doesn't matter. Pick the ones you like. So if we look at power, and let's say we draw the pendulum up to the right. Here's a powerful person. So let's conjure up the idea, the archetype of a powerful person. well, this guy's a mover and or this woman's a mover and a shaker. They've got a nice car and they're a CEO of a big company and they've got billions of dollars of equity that they can throw at creating whatever they want. They're powerful. They're powerful. Look at that. There's power right there. And just conjure up the idea that it's an iconic sense of power. If the ego of that person, if the sense of self of that person has their identity caught up in the personification or the image of power, the car they drive up in is important. The suit that they wear is important. The title on their business card is important. And they project a sense of self with these icons. If we read social magazines, they point to these pictures, these models, these ideas of what power is. So here's an iconic portrayal of power. And we draw the pendulum down to the middle, and this time we draw it up to the left. And maybe this person is powerless, without power. So on one side we have powerful, and we swing the pendulum to the other side, and we have powerless. Maybe this is a homeless person or someone panhandling. Or someone with extremely low self-esteem or self-abuse or whatever. No sense of power, no icon, nothing to hang their hat on as far as a sense of self. Well, in truth, both of them are stuck. They're both stuck in a single sense of self. Because if indeed the powerful person has their persona tied up in their car, I can go up and scratch a big scratch in the side of their car, and their sense of self is threatened because of what happens to this object. Not that I would want to do that, but it's just an example of, well, if my car's not perfect, then there's something wrong with me. Or if my suit isn't. They literally have a sense of self connected to the iconic portrayal of their sense of self. And this by no means applies to every single person who's powerful. This is just an example. And then you go over to the other side, and if a person has no sense of self, if a person can't hold any kind of a lasting portrayal of who they are, and you walk up to them with a three-piece suit and a dry-cleaned bag, they're not going to identify with it at all. They can't personify any sense of self. So it's kind of like the opposite. And this will make more sense as we start to talk about the Akash. So. If we look at this portrayal of a sense of power, both sides are stuck. So if we were to have a magic analyzer, and in television we have all kinds of equipment that analyzes, we had an analyzer and we put up the image of these two people and we looked at their subconscious karmic energy, both of them would have standing waves, energetic accumulations in their subconscious related to their sense of self or lack of sense of self. And any standing wave of energy in your subconscious has a karmic propensity, just as I discovered when I was so addicted or focused on being, quote, correct, being, quote, accurate as a chief engineer. When I broke that stigma and let the pendulum swing wherever the hell it wanted to, my power went up. So if you've been listening to this radio show for any length of time whatsoever, I got to think you're on a powerful path. Your soul's going, come on, baby, we got some stuff to do. We've got a life purpose. We're gonna accomplish things in this life as I had dreamt of before your ego, your persona was even created. So when we think of these archetypes, to understand that when we talk about the ascension or the rising of human consciousness, these archetypes are not cast in stone. They're not rigid templates. They're softer attributes, if you will. In fact, the thinner your personal energy persona is, or the purer, how pure your personal energy is, will relate directly when it comes to embodying or mining the Akashic records of your soul's lifetimes. And we're going to get into that a little later, but I'm kind of setting the stage here so we can really delve in deep and understand how archetypes and the Akash fold together hand in hand, and how you as human consciousness, or rather, even more profoundly, you as divine consciousness incarnate, divine consciousness is without archetype. Divine consciousness is that pure light of unassigned consciousness, pure white consciousness at the core of your being. If you go back towards heaven in your consciousness, you shed archetypes, you shed energy, you shed senses of self. The burning bush, I am that I am. There's no archetype there. The Bhagavad Gita, as it is, there's no judgment, there's no polarity, there's no posture. Those are powerful, powerful sentences because they embody unconditional love. They are source consciousness. They can move from where they are to any portrayal without having to let go of any energy. And I'm deviating here, but that's the engineer in me. I couldn't sentence all this had I not had the engineer brain on when I studied all this through my life path. So when we talk about archetypes, and again, if you're listening to the show, the power of the divine consciousness within you is to really flush out archetypes, even the ones you might be looking for, to flush stagnant energy within your own personal energy persona, even if it relates to what you desire. Because I wanted to be a good engineer, and I desired to be right and accurate, and yet there was still a consequence to it. So when we talk about a powerful soul living out a life path that transcends the stigma of the past, that transcends the mythology of our culture, that soul is going to be pure. That soul is not going to have any karmic quagmire in its trunk. It's not going to have unresolved crap in its subconscious. It's going to be energetically pure. The tagline of New Human Living is pure, authentic you. I suggest that sentence describes the essence of divine personas incarnate in this lifetime to kick some divine ass in a loving and caring way, in a joyful and happy way. So as we talk about this archetype thing, let's shift the consciousness and take a new focus at this idea of archetypes. So now I'm going to pose some questions to you, the listener. Are you ready? What types of archetypes would you like to embody that you don't embody now? Take a few seconds. You can listen to this later and you can write it down on a piece of paper. Moving it into the physical realm by writing it down is a really good idea. What archetypes do you desire that you don't embody now? Another way to look at that is, if you were to go and mine your Akashic records, what attributes, what values of your Akash, we should delve into that a little bit so we know what we're talking about. When you're going to harvest your Akashic records for archetypal attributes to embody, to improve who you are today, to move closer to who you desire to be today, which archetypes would you harvest? So think about that, because a lot of times in our spiritual journey, we're cleaning out the trunk. I really like to look at people's modalities when it comes to working with human consciousness. Are we healing ourselves? Are we moving ourselves to wholeness? Or have we flipped the coin over and looked at, if we were whole, who would we be then? In other words, if I knew the truth of myself, how would I behave? If I embodied the immense power of my divine persona, what would my life purpose be? What intentions or goals would I have for myself? So let's flip it over now, or change subjects rather, and look at the Akashic records. Boy, time flies when you're having fun. You know, I could talk about this stuff for a long time and maybe write a book about it, because it's so fundamental to every flipping soul on the planet. That's what I like about it. So the Akash, you could think of the Akash as a history or a library of archetypes, a history or a journal, if you will. And if we look at it as energy, an energetic film or movie of your past. When we talked about the pendulum and power, if you spent a lifetime on either side of that scale, you would have a standing wave of energy as an energetic signature. If we put on strictly energetic goggles or analyzers and looked at the energetic signature or collage of your past, and we looked at these archetypes, so we go to the a past life and look at the Akash and observed your persona as it went through that lifetime, just as raw energy, there would be energetic attributes that would reflect the archetypes you were living out. So a quick look at the idea of what is the Akash, the Akashic records. You can think of it as a data recorder or a persona recorder or a history, if you will, of all the different lifetimes that your soul has lived. Many old souls have lived hundreds and even thousands of lifetimes on this planet, playing out all kinds of archetypes. And I'm sure there's seasons of, if we were to look at the whole span of all your lifetimes, there would be seasons where you went into one side of the pendulum swing. So maybe you went into poverty and suffering and homeless and struggle, and then the pendulum swung to the other side and you were powerful and a visionary, and you could make things happen, and you had a way with people, you governed really well. Perhaps you were a king or a authority that had a compassionate heart and was a heart-centered, quote, warrior, unquote, for the good of the people. The reason I say there would be seasons of this is, if you observe human consciousness over time, everything typically is incremental, in that no time does a divine being, you pray to an archangel or a deity or some really powerful persona in the collective, in the cosmic consciousness of all that is, and say, well, you know, heal my ass, praying me with the powerful archetype, turn me into a king or a queen. Never, ever, ever, ever is there a poof and your whole persona just flip over 180. first of all, it'd scare the crap out of your ego, I promise, because the world you experience outside of you is a mirror of what's inside of you. And if you energetically flip from one side to the other, all the different spectrums of the karmic impressions in your persona flipped all the pendulums to the other side, everything outside of you would behave totally opposite, and your ego would feel like it had no control. When consciousness moves up or down or anywhere, it's incremental, and there's a blessing to that. So as our souls progress through lifetimes, as we go through one lifetime, and perhaps we bring on energy of struggle or lack, the first time through wouldn't take us all the way to the bottom. It might take us several lifetimes to go there. And then there's a point where we hit bottom and our resolve flips and we start our way back to neutral, if you will, where the pendulum's in the center. And then we choose to have the creation side, the powerful side. Not only am I deserving, but I'm capable, and I'm an alchemist or a sage or a mystic, and I can conjure up an idea of what I want, and I know how to make it happen. I know how to use the eternal laws of creation to create whatever I want. So when we talk about the Akash, we can see seasons of lifetimes where our pendulums swing one side or the other. And I suggest to you to keep really soft eyes when it comes to this, because there's 7 billion people on the planet, and I promise you if we put every one of them in an analyzer and look at their karmic propensities, no two would look the same. In other words, the collage, the totality of energy within their subconscious, there's so many different archetypes we can have, and how diverse we use the term of archetype when we look at the human persona can get pretty diverse too. So I don't think it serves us well to make a nice clean chart and say this is the total summary of consciousness, because consciousness is so flippant and dimensional. As soon as you draw a line and say it's this and not that, you've buggered it up. So when we talk about the Akash, we're talking about this energetic storyline of your soul from when it was first born. When your soul was first born, it had no human experience and it had no karmic imprinting. It was pure. It came out of the purity of divine consciousness. And then as you started bringing on incarnation after incarnation, you started creating karmic propensities. The first moment that your persona postured with any type of the experience you're having in the moment, well, that would be the original sin. That would be the original moment where there was no posture, where there was no polarity, where the pendulum hadn't picked a side. In that first moment of posturing, you chose one side or the other and started pushing the pendulum and created the karmic propensity. Thus, that would have been the original sin of what would turn out to be a karmic season for your soul over lifetimes. Boy, time flies by. There's so much we can get into here, because everything we've talked about so far is based on the past. And the mythology of our past doesn't fit the new paradigms that are being downloaded into our human potential. If you look at the dimensions of consciousness, the vast majority of us have spent many, many lifetimes in 3D consciousness. And the whole part of this human awakening, the whole part of human consciousness on planet Earth awakening with the evolution, with the rise of consciousness on the planet, is to move up through those dimensions, and the next most prominent will be the fifth dimension. And the fifth dimension has a whole new set of experiential arenas of choices, arenas of possibilities. Like the quantum field doesn't respond too well to 3D thinking, but in 5D, you can have quantum consciousness. You can have a quantum effect on your human experience. But I don't want to deviate too much. I want to bring some closure to this topic because time flies. So we're talking about archetypes and our Akashic records. So let's get to this idea of, well, what do we do with this? How do we mine the Akashic records? How do we embody the archetypes we want and release the archetypes that we don't want? How do we get everything we want and do everything we want and be everything we want and just have a grand old time? Perfect. That sounds like the desire of consciousness itself. Well, when we look at harvesting the Akash for archetypal attributes that would serve us, that we desire in this lifetime here and now, time and space to our experience in the past has been this linear thing. In about 18 minutes, the show will be over, and that seems to be in the future. But there's this thing about holographic consciousness that says all nows are happening now. For example, if you do a past life regression, which is a great contemplation when it comes to the Akashic records, your consciousness now literally connects with your consciousness in the past, and there are those that would say that's possible because it's the same now. So in this now consciousness, in this moment, all your lifetimes are available. All your lifetimes energetically are available for you to sample with your consciousness. And I tell you what, when I first had my past life regression, I am by no means the model psychic, the model for such a long time I wanted to see psychically. I wanted to have a motion picture of everything. And my psychic strengths are not that. They're feeling. It's this knowingness. And when I went to do a past life regression, I kind of bumped up against this wall of, well, I don't see anything, damn it. This can't be right. I want to see something. And the first episode I did a past life regression, the past life regressionist was so patient. I kept, you know, well, what do you feel? Nothing. What do you feel? Nothing. What do you feel? Nothing. And it was a very, very, very subtle energy that first showed up. And when I followed that very subtle energy, there was a whoosh. And when I say whoosh, I mean a rapid transition from being subtle to being a whole body experience. The first time I did it, I was on the deck of a Christopher Columbus era ship in the middle of the ocean during a hurricane, and most of the people were already in the water at night in a hurricane, and I'm dripping wet, and here comes my wave, and whoosh, I'm washed off the deck, and now I'm in the water, and I'm struggling with life. And it was so real. So why do I pop this in the conversation? When you talk about harvesting your Akash, there's that the energy of your Akash is present here and now. So the lifetime that you want to tap, say you were a powerful and loving ruler, a king that was very wise and brought peace and prosperity to your kingdom. And that feels good to you now and you want to embody that. So when you close your eyes and you daydream about that persona, a king or a queen with such love for the kingdom, such love for the population, a strong desire to bring peace and prosperity. There's a vibrational collage of polarities of what that feels like. And what you want to do is daydream, literally daydream the vibration of what that archetype would feel like if you were to embody it. And I suggest add to that a purity, a cleanliness to the feeling. Because in the past, you might have been a king or a queen with a prosperous kingdom, but you could have still had a lot of energy in your psyche. If you bring the karmic stigmas of the Akashic lifetime when you're a king and a queen, and you vibrationally bring it verbatim into this lifetime, there will have been a karmic propensity to it, just like being right or wrong about being an engineer. When you do it this time, we're smart, wise, whatever. It has been recognized that the purity of consciousness is power itself. If all your pendulums are cocked to one side or another, you have a karmic propensity and you can't be as powerful as you choose. In this lifetime, the leaders, the rulers that'll step forward in this next chapter of our human story, one of the key attributes will be common to those who are authentically portraying the divine idea of what it means to be a fifth dimensional energy on this planet will be purity. And why do I say that? Because the quantum field will respond to the totality of our energy. If we got a lot of karmic junk in our trunk, every single time we set our intention to the quantum field, it will mirror our subconscious as well as our conscious mind, and thus dilute and pollute the intended outcome, because energetically we had a subconscious imprint and a conscious imprint. That's another story. I don't want to deviate too much. So if you're desiring to embody an archetype, yes, to start by simply daydreaming it. You're literally, what happens when you take your consciousness and you daydream is you're creating a standing wave of energy of what you desire. You're creating a standing wave energy of what you desire. So if you think about a king or a queen in this example that we're going with here, as you daydream the idea of a king or a queen, you're moving your real-time now consciousness into the spectrum of a king or a queen archetype. And in order for you to connect with your past and or future lifetimes in your Akashic records and connect with the archetypes that you desire to embody, the phone call you make that makes the connection is creating a vibrational signature of what you want to connect with, the attribute you want to connect with. So by simply daydreaming king or queen, there's going to be really subtle energy when you go to connect with that. Now, other people might have different experiences of it. For example, if your psychic ability is seeing or hearing or some other flavor, you might see it immediately. You might have a much different connection. So don't follow my example verbatim, but when you set your intent and then you bring your consciousness to daydream or create that signature of what you want to experience, that's your calling card. That's the phone call you put into the holographic consciousness of all that is. And when you connect with that archetype of the past, perhaps king and queen in this example, you're going to have a vibrational download, if you will, of the vibration of how it felt when you were a king or a queen. You had a sense of peace within yourself. How could you have peace in your kingdom if you didn't have peace in yourself? You had a sense of a vision. You had a sense of trusting the power of your people. You had a sense of trusting that you could accomplish what you wanted to. Certainly there were kings that were unsure of themselves. Certainly there were kings that exploited the common. But when we're talking about archetypes and harvesting your Akashic records, we want to be able to cherry pick the energy that is compatible, that is in alignment with a five-dimensional example of what we're portraying. We don't want to bring the karma of the past. We want to bring the attributes that we want to embody that, and not bring the karmic luggage, if you will, from the past. So the Akash goes forward and backwards. Your forward lifetimes are available here too. You can literally go forward in your lifetimes and connect with your 5D self after it's lived a few lifetimes or a few dozen lifetimes or a few hundred lifetimes. And the more time you spend in 5D, the more you've mastered it, the more you honor it, the more you trust it, the more intuitive you are with it. Anytime you spend a consistent amount of time, your intuition gets hits about how things work, and you get more intuitive about how to express in 5D, create in 5D, live in 5D. So when we talk about harvesting the Akash, we want to dream up that idea, connect with the subtle energy, and then be conscious of the energy that has a high vibration, that has a high resonance with our higher self. As you purify your own energy, you're revealing a higher consciousness in you. And just like when we transmit from a television site to TV sets, we have to align the frequencies for it to work. The tuner is listening on a very specific frequency. The tuner in your TV is dialed into a very specific frequency. And at the transmitter, we create that frequency very, very accurately with crystals. We use crystals and they vibrate. And then we apply power to the vibration of that crystal. And we can talk to the populace. I love it. I've done it for decades, and it's still just a delightful, fascinating thing to think about. So when we think about connecting with our Akash, we want to have purity. We want to align the frequency of what we desire. And we might not have experienced it yet in this lifetime, but we can still conjure up a realm, a ballpark idea of what it feels like, and then when we connect with our persona of our within our Akashic records, there's information that is transferred that expands the spectrum of attributes, if you will. Perhaps you haven't had the king or queen attributes in this lifetime, and when you connect with the past or the future when you're a king or a queen, at first it's a subtle connection, and then energy is transferred back and forth, and that expands the spectral range, the spectral arena of information, and the download gets clearer and more vivid. And to harvest the Akash is to take the energies, the energetic signatures of the positive attributes that you want, and feel their vibration. Feel their vibration, and then use it as a kind of a reference frequency, if you will. That's your sample of what it feels like when you're authentic to that. And then there's a really cool thing you can do with reference frequencies or the like. You can use those as a wand and literally wash out of your psyche all the incongruent frequencies. And that's part of energy work, which is a whole nother topic. But when you sample the what you want to embody, the archetypes, to sum this up, we're almost out of time. You want to harvest your Akash and find the archetypes that you want to bring into your life. First, dial it in by starting to daydream to create a carrier frequency or a standing, an initial contact frequency of the archetype. And with your intention, as you do that, you're going to start to dial in an energetic phone call, if you will, with those aspects of your past. For myself, it starts off very subtly. And then as once I get a connection going, then information is transferred and it expands and becomes much more rich and has a lot more information. Once you've made that connection, look for the higher frequency energies that describe energetically what it feels like to embody that, and then use that as the reference or to clean out any incongruent energy within your own persona. Because ultimately, to successfully embody any archetype, you have to embody it. What does embodiment mean? It means that the consciousness within you is in resonance with the archetype. So if I'm compassionate, if I'm going to embody compassion, the vibration of my psyche is the exact vibration of compassion, and thus I've embodied it. If I'm only thinking it and my thoughts, feelings, choices, and actions during the day are not compassionate, I haven't embodied it. I know this has been a lot of information, and people are very excited and very responsive to this kind of conversation. We've just got a few minutes left. I want you to do whatever you want, but know that our human potential is extremely powerful. We've conjured up a flippin' story, and it's just a story with a whole bunch of energetic karma behind it of our past. Your soul can personify any archetype. The divine consciousness within you can create anything you desire. The root consciousness in you is creation itself. There's nothing out of your reach. You're a very powerful soul, every single one of us. You are a very powerful soul. And you can create whatever you want in this lifetime. Your soul had a life path envisioned before you were even born. Your soul had a life purpose handcrafted for you before you were even born. This chapter of our human story is unlike any other. Our very next lifetime will not be like this lifetime. This is the turning point of human consciousness. This is the lifetime that I suggest would be the most exciting, fun, rewarding thing to embody the purest, authentic energy that is at the core of your being and bring it all the way out into your physical form. To be able to embody the divine idea of yourself, to live your life as you choose. It is my life path to language the nature of divine consciousness incarnate. It is my life path to describe how purity and authenticity are key factors for you to embody your divine self. It is my life path to describe in Western terms the Eastern philosophy of enlightenment and how to embody that in a powerful, joyful, authentic, and fun way. Trust in your life path. Trust in the purpose of why you're here. You can't have broken it in your past. It's hardwired in the core of your being. No human intention can separate you from your divinity ever. You are safe no matter what happens. Trust that safety. Stand tall. Dream your best dream. You're here to literally create the life that you want as you choose. Own your life. Own your vision. Own your dream. Go to newhumanliving.com, sign up for the newsletter. There's a book there, Personal Power Fundamentals, that talks about karma, taking it on, letting go of it. My last book, Citizen King, The New Age of Power, is teaching your ego how to live a divine life, how to get your ego out of the way so your heart and soul can fully express in your life. Hey, it's my pleasure bringing you episodes like this. I love, love, love doing it. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Les Jensen. Until next time.
This has been a New Human Living Radio broadcast to bring your soul's inspiration into effect and live your life wide open. Check out our host, Les Jensen's latest book, Citizen King, The New Age of Power, at newhumanliving.com. Thanks for listening.